Today is March 1st, the year 2000. This is the March meeting of the Cumberland Township Historical Society. This evening, our speaker will be Jean-Noël Dessin from Sarsfield. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. We'll start the proceedings. I'm glad to welcome you, all of you, to this regular meeting of the Cumberland Township Historical Society. Our guest speaker this evening is Jean-Noël Dessin, who was born in the township and has led a full and varied life as an active member of the community. Jean-Noël is a founding member of our society, and we are grateful that he accepted to be our speaker tonight. Jean-Noël.
Good evening, everybody. When Ruth asked me to communicate the history of the Dessin family in early January, I did not say yes and I did not say no. Because I haven't addressed a meeting in the English language for about 20 years, and since then there has been a lot of changes. Old age has grown up on me, and plus a second set of teeth. And addressing a group like you in my second language is quite an effort for me. But on the 20th of January, Bob Sarri called me, and he convinced me, and he just told me that I just about had to do it. So this is quite an intellectual gymnastic for me, because I always think in French, and I remember in French, and then I translate. So this is quite an intellectual gymnastics, and if I get my tongue twisted sometimes, I hope that you will bear with me. I knew when Ruth called me that I had a lot of information concerning the Dessin family and its origin. And the way I come to have this information is that a niece of mine who works for the civil service found a clipping on her desk one day about l'Association des Familles Saint-Pierre-Dessin. Association des Familles Saint-Pierre-Dessin incorporated in 1988. And this was in 1998. And that they were organizing to celebrate the 325th anniversary of the first de Saint-Pierre that came to this country, seemingly in 1664. She didn't have too much interest in this, but before she threw this paper in the waste paper basket, she called me, and I had a lot of interest in this, and to make the story short, she mailed the whole document to me, and I became number 85 of l'Association des Familles Saint-Pierre-Dessin. And I registered at the same time for the annual meeting. That it was a two-day organization that was taking place at Saint-Jean-Port-Joli and Serra des Aunets. That's a town and a village about 60 or 70 miles east of Quebec on the South Shore. So I registered for this annual meeting because I wanted to find out a lot about my genealogy, and I knew that these people must have had a lot of information. I nearly did not make it at that summer meeting, because at that very winter I spent a few weeks in Florida, and on the 4th of February, 89, I suffered an infarctus, followed by a phlebitis, 26 days in the hospital, 2 or 3 months without being able to drive my car. But I recovered some way, somehow, and with the help of my good wife, we made it to that meeting, and we were very astonished and surprised at the number of people that showed up at that meeting, and at that whole organization, and at the quality of the organization. Of the 3 or 4 members that they expected, there were 900 registrations. And at the banquet at Saint-Jean-Port-Joli on that second Saturday of July, 89, there was 1,000 participants. We met a lot of cousins, and there was a couple of brothers that stood out among the group that gave us a lot of information about our genealogy. They had made much research into our genealogy, and they gave us much information that day. But when they seen the enthusiasm generated, both of them, a few years later, wrote a book on this one here is a dictionary. No, this one is a dictionary containing 7,500 marriages, all descendants of Pierre de Saint-Pierre. And later on, he published an annex containing another 3,000. And with this dictionary, I can trace my genealogy right down to Pierre de Saint-Pierre. The other brother, Gérard, he published a history of the family Saint-Pierre de Saint in America. And with all the research that they made, they went back to 2 generations in France. So here we have the history of the de Saint-Pierre history from 1393 to 1993. So today our association is alive and well. We are always about 600 members. We have a quarterly bulletin that is published for the association. As you can see, we have a flag. The flag is the coat of arms of the association. All the annual meetings so far have taken place in the province of Quebec, except one 2 years ago, which took place at Tuckasee in New Brunswick. The annual meeting of 2000, having a big celebration in a village by the name of Saint-Augustin, I think, which is a few miles on this side of Quebec City. I attended most of them. I missed a couple of them in the last 11 or 12 years of the association. And we are hoping, if everything goes that we really expect, that we'll have our annual meeting in the Township of Cumberland in 2001. If I told you all this about our association, before I come down to the Dessaines in Cumberland Township, it is possibly because I read one day that Winston Churchill said that if you wanted to know who you are, you have to know where you come from. When my grandfather came down the Ottawa River 150 years ago, he did not leave us with an itinerary of how he got here or the date that he got here. The man could not read nor write. What brought him to Cumberland Village, I'll never know, but I expect that it is possibly his spirit of adventure inherited from his Normandy blood that encouraged this young 19 or 20 year old Frenchman to settle in Cumberland. But there was transportation at that time on the Ottawa River, because I read the diary of Alex Muir, and it's around that time, I think it's in 1840 or some times around there, that he left from the east side of the island of Montreal to Dunning's Wharf. Dunning's Wharf.
1845.
And that was 1845. And that took him 2 days. But there was navigation at that time. And where was Dunning's Wharf?
It was on the Quebec side.
Was on the Quebec side. Well, that's just what I thought. But
and he came up by steamer.
A steamer, yeah. Okay.
In fact, he was supposed to arrive at the McLeod Wharf. But apparently the McLeod Wharf wasn't available, so he went to the Dunning Wharf.
Where was the McLeod Wharf?
I don't know. And on the internet, the old books, which say that there have been stopping around the island in Cumberland, there's been some railroad boats or steamboats coming to Cumberland at least since the 1830s.
Because I always heard that the Dunnings in Cumberland, I thought that the Dunnings Wharf must have been at Cumberland, but then he said that the next day that he took a boat
across
the river, a canoe.
He came over by canoe.
Anyway. When my grandfather got here 150 years ago, he was not a farmer. He was not a coureur of the bois. But he had a trade. He was a shoemaker. And I guess good leather boots was a commodity all needed, because apparently he must have did quite well. The first name appears in the register of the Catholic Church at Clarence Street, where he married Mathilde Demoux. I got this in here. Mathilde Damour was a young widow who had married Pierre Hébert. She had one daughter. And in 1856, Théophile Dessay married whether it was here, they said that both are from the mission of Cumberland. And I learned there that Theophile, I have it here someplace. That Theophile was the major son of Pierre Dessin and Joseph Grégoire of the parish of Saint-Isidore in Montreal. Married Mathilde Damour, the widow of Pierre Hébert, both from the mission of Cumberland, and it is signed Michel Curie, Michel Priest. Now, I'm going to tell you of all the people of that family that were born in Cumberland. Theophile here, the first son, was born, carried the same name Theophile. He was born in 57. He lived a long time in this region, many years in this region. He later married Marie Lefebvre Descôtes. He farmed in the region of Sarsfield, and two of his children were baptized in Sarsfield. And he later emigrated to the state of Minnesota with his family. He worked in the state of Minnesota. I never seen him. I heard we had visitors from his family, and he died in 1941 at the ripe old age of 84. The second daughter, Aunt Audivine, she married the brother of Marie Descôtes, Louis Descôtes. They raised their family in Rockland, and all the older ones here must remember Adelaide Descôtes, who was the manager of public works, I guess, in Rockland. And I think in the evening he put on a police uniform, and he was the he had seen that the law and order were respected in the town of Rockland. There are still descendants of the folks in Rockland. These three here, as you see, died young, so I'm going about. This one died at 5 years old. This one died at 5 years old. This one died as a baby. Marie Flore. Born in 1863, she married Gilbert Delhoun. They had a farm on the fifth line here someplace. Okay. Thank you. Maybe I should have done this one, right? She married Gilbert Delhoun. They had one daughter. She died shortly after, at the age of 25. That daughter became Mrs. Xavier Lapointe. And the Lapointes were prominent citizens of our parish. Anytime anybody needed help, whether it was during their sickness or whether it was during after a death, they were always there to support the family. That's Marie Flore. Number seven. Number seven is my father, Camille. Born October the 7th. He always told me that he was born in one of the four white houses that used to be in front of the Wilson farm. That must have been where my grandfather did the shoemaking for the time that he was in Cumberland. They moved to Sarsfield, or at that time it was called Dove's Corner, because it had been settled by two families by the name of Dove, and they were called the Doves, the Dove's Corner. They moved there in 70 or 71, because my father always told me that he was 4 years old, but when they moved to Sarsfield, October, his birthday being in October, that might have been 70, possibly 71. I'll finish with these here before I come back to Camille, because Camille is the one that lived and died. Lived for 81 and a half years in this township, and the others mostly emigrated to other parts of the country. Marie Pamela. Oh, Adela. Yeah, that's my father's brother. He was just 2 years. He emigrated to Minnesota with his older brother in the very late 1800s. He doesn't appear in the enumeration of 1901. So he must have emigrated down there. He retired in the state of Minnesota. He visited us after his retirement. The first time he visited us was in the late 30s. He was married to Aunt Susie. They did not have any children. Uncle Adelar visited us another times in the 1940s. And he died sometime during the war. In the 1940s, I don't know exactly. Marie Pamela, born in 1870. She married Adelard Desjardins. He was a carpenter. He's the one that built most of the houses around Sarsfield. She gave birth to two daughters. One of them married a Mr. Aldege Fournier, and the other one married Joseph Dion. Both of them raised their family around Sarsfield. She died at 23 after giving birth to two daughters. Now this year I made a little mistake here. Number 10 is Aunt Lucy, and Aunt Lucy. Here I have to open a parenthesis, because Aunt Lucy was a school teacher. And in the enumeration of 1891, would that make sense there? She was 18 and she was a school teacher. This man could not read or write. My father could not read or write. Aunt Ojivin, I knew her. She could read and she could write, both French and English. And this one here was a school teacher. I have maybe a little bit of difficulty with this. Was it that girls were brighter than the boys? Was it the lack of French schools in the area? Did they send their daughters in private schools someplace? It seems that they did. Or was it a tradition that the boys did not need an education and they used their strength to clear the land and plow and do the hard work? Anyway, we won't get into this argument, but this was the way it goes. The same, this one I knew, she could read or write. This one was a school teacher. Uncle Ferdinand was a bachelor. He worked on the farm with my father. He was an epileptic, and he died in Brockville in 1928. This last one here, Elzéar, I know very little about him. I seen his name on my grandfather's will. He was then 13. And I can't tell you anything about somebody that I don't know, because, as far as the enumeration are concerned, he was not there either in 1901, but he was there in 1891, and he says he was 13. Now, that's all of this. I told you before that the oldest boy, Uncle Theophile, had worked on the farm. He must have worked elsewhere too, but he worked on the farm. My grandfather, when lived at Cumberland, the first land he bought was Lot 11, Concession 2. If this is the village of Sarsfield here, this is one concession above the village, and this is Colonial Road right there. My grandfather bought this in 1869. From a person by the name of Woods. In 1870, shortly before he moved to Sarsfield, this pink line here is about where the old Force Road passed. And this is where the church was. And the first place that the when my grandfather moved to Sarsfield, my dad always told me that they lived in a house in front of the church. There's no house there now, but in front of where the old church was, and that's where they moved to. And in 1870, my wife told me to use this. My grandfather bought this piece of land here from the Crown. Yes, from the Crown. I have the contract here. But it's registered only at the registrar office. It reads 1870. But this was registered only in 76. I don't know why. Maybe somebody has explanations for this. I don't know. Mr. Stanley used to be the registrar. He told me one time that after people bought a lot from the Crown, inspectors came over years after and seen if the people were living on the land that they had bought. And if they had settled on that farm, that they registered the land in their names. And if they had moved away and disappeared, well, the Crown took it back. Maybe that's an explanation. I don't. Anyway, the registration here reads 1876, and about 24 years ago, I guess, or 20, we celebrated the 100th anniversary of our farm. The first transaction that my grandfather made after he bought this farm was a a half acre of land to number 14 school board. So when they moved to Sarsfield, there was no school, and the closest school was at Coburn's Corner, which was at the corner of McGladrey and Dunning. That was the... And my father told me he went to school one day across the bush, and he thought it was too much. So that was the first and last evening. In 1988, I guess my father was the only one that was interested in the farm. So he bought this farm here. That's 1 mile above the village. From Theophile. Well now, it says Theophile and his wife. But they don't mention the name of the wife. They didn't at that time. So, it might have been from his brother or from his father, I don't know, both of them were named Theophile. But anyway, my father bought this land, and 2 years later, he bought the home farm, the home of the 100 acres here. In 1990, just bought the home farm, that's lot 11, concession 4. In 1892, Theophile, my grandfather, died suddenly after walking to church to attend Mass on New Year's Day. Rummaging through my papers, this is what I found. Souvenir de Théophile de Saint, âgé de 56 ans et 6 mois et 2 jours, né le 29 juin 1835, décédé le 1er janvier 1891. So he died in the church New Year's Day 1892. In the year 1900, my dad married Amanda Poupard. This is my dad here. This is my mother. In 1900, my dad was 33 years old. She was 18. Amanda Poupard was the daughter of Stanislas Poupard, who had settled on lot 6 of concession 3, that's down Dunning Road here, right in front of the Reginbald farm where the Armitage live now. They have an antique shop or farm there or whatever. This is where my grandfather, Poupard, lived, and they had moved. She was the daughter of Stanislas Poupard, an exile de Chevrefest, whom had settled on Lachine-Mainville. She was the first child of the Poupard family, and she had been born in Quebec. They called the Lower Canada at that time, in the between Valleyfield and Montreal region there, someplace somewhere. In 1809, my dad got rid of this farm here and sold it to the Sidney brothers. They owned land across Larmer Lane, and it was more handy for them. And at the same time, the same year, he bought 50 acres adjoining this 100 acres, just west of that 100 acres. It belonged to a person by the name of Philarant Tanguy, who had settled in Montreal. Rummaging through the papers, I found that in 1911, my dad made a loan. It was really from a company in Ottawa, and I guess they did not take a chance on anything, but the interest seemingly was very reasonable. But he made a loan of $1,000. They took a mortgage on the farm. And that was to buy a Toronto windmill and a Toronto silo. So he had, so seemingly if he bought a windmill to pump the water and a silo, he must have had quite a few cattle around 1910, 1911. 1918, all families have tales to tell us about soldiers coming back from the war or unhappy, some that never came back. 1918 was also, the Western world was also affected by a plague that they called the Spanish flu, which made many more victims than the World War had done. 1918 was quite the year for the Dessing family. My dad, Camille, every winter sold some of his products of the farm on Barwood Market. Whether it be a fat calf, hogs, hay, or loose hay. But on one of his trips, he stopped to visit his oldest daughter, Cecile. This girl here, who was a student at Les Filles La Sagesse. And she was not well. She was very sick indeed. And so he came back home, drove back home that very night, and the next day he took the train at Leonard, went back to Ottawa, the tramway down to Eastview, fetched his girl, brought her to the doctor. The doctor gave her a tonic, sent her home for a rest. But a couple of days later, she was again, she was always very sick. Took her back to the doctor in Ottawa. They rushed her to the hospital. Surgery was performed, and seemingly it was a ruptured appendicitis, ruptured, and it had peritonitis. Yeah, it had, and she died on the 16th of March. This was an awful shock for my parents. This was their family in 1970. My oldest brother, Victor, was 16 years old, was born in 1901. Cecile was born in 1903. Claire was born in 1909. She was 7 years old. The youngest one here was Alphonse, about 4 years old. This girl, Claire, was a sickly, retired girl. She had only one beautiful daughter. which they lost, and that was an awful shock to them, and as it would be to any family. But it was not going to be the last shock. During their grief, my mother got pregnant. To her surprise, and to the surprise of all, because she had not had a baby for the last 6 years. During her pregnancy, she did not escape that terrible flu that was going around. She was in the coma for several days. My father, and Father Laflamme, often told me that it was a miracle that she never put through. But then guess what? Mother recovered some way, somehow. And the next surprise came her on the wee hours of Christmas morning when she gave birth to her third son, for the better or for the worse. That son was baptized on December the 29th, 1918, under the name of Joseph Laurent Chanoel.
Wow.
Years later, I'm here in front of you trying to tell you the story of the Dessin family. I was reading a book some time ago about agriculture in the province and how the milk marketing board was founded and everything. It was written by the former deputy minister of agriculture, Everett Biggs. And I was reading in that book that modernity came to rural Ontario after the Second World War, when the water went with rural electricity, when the water closets replaced the back houses, and that the water taps appeared at the kitchen sink. My dad and mother must have been quite progressive people, because they've brought that modernity to our home, not after the First World War, but after the Second World War. The old one and a half story clapboard house, which we see the corner of it here in this picture, was just about torn down, except the walls. They added a kitchen of 16 by 24 to it, and the finished product was this house here. There was no veranda in 1920. The veranda was built a few years later. It was this farm. This was a house with a large kitchen, a parlor, a dining room, and a hall downstairs with 9-foot ceilings, and 5 bedrooms upstairs, and a complete bathroom. How could this operate without the electricity? The rainwater was gathered by a system of eaves and pipes to a large cistern in the cellar, and the water was pumped by hand with a semi-rotary pump to another steel tank in the attic, and the whole system operated by gravity. This was a good, this pumping this water was a good job for the hired man on a rainy day. So good soft water, hot and cold, to the bathroom and kitchen sink was offered to us. The water was heated by a waterfront on the big Finley kitchen stove, which thrown it in the kitchen. I'm not giving the details to brag that our house was better than any of the neighbors, but just to tell you that Camille, who would never, not, neither read nor write, my mother could, though, and she had a little bit more in the education, but they must have been quite progressive people. In 1921, another piece of land was added to our farm. He bought this piece from a fellow by the name of Mr. Demers, who was of a certain age and had retired. So my dad then owned the complete lot number 11. In 1922 was the main income, was the production of Bill. He thought it was time to build a new barn. I remember my older brother and my father and my mother shopping in the V.T. Barn Book. Angus, you must remember the V.T. Barn Book, right? It was a catalog that was put out by the Fergus, by the V.T. Company in Fergus, Ontario, and it gave a bunch of plans and all the equipment for barns and stables, horse stables, cow stables, or it. And they were the main suppliers of that kind of hardware. I remember shopping in this B.T. Barn Book, and they settled on a barn that was 36 by 70 with a 50-foot stable for 20 cows. Yeah, the stable was from here to here. This is a piece of that I added on there. But it came from here to here. There was no milk room there. That milk room was built a lot later. I remember that was in 1922. I was 4 years old. The framers for that barn were Streffley and Napoleon Faubert, and the architects of the cement floor and the whole BT installation and the steel roof were done by the Newton brothers, Bob and Sam from Navan. I think they serviced all the pumps and did all the plumbing and pipe fitting around our district at that time. At 4 years old, I remember a lot of things. And when the Newton brothers drove up with their Ford truck with all their equipment, it was quite a thrill for them. And as a young kid, there never seemed to be a dull moment on our farm. Another thing that we had on our farm that made it meeting quite attractive, I guess, was the orchard. We seemed to be the only farm in the region that had an orchard. I remember we have apples from late June till late winter. We had four trees of white transparents. We had four trees of Dutch apples. Dutch apples, that does not exist now. They came a little later than the white transparents. And then we had another row of apples that they called the Saint Laurents, the Saint Laurent. They came a little later in the summer. And then right closer to the house, we had a great big Macintosh apple tree and a crowd of them. I remember very well the barrel of Macintosh in the colder part of the cellar sitting right beside the fork of the barrel of salt pork. Another thing that happened in the 1924 or someplace around there was the trashing business. As my father had 200 acres of land, and the other farmers around the area, most of them had 50 or 100 acres at that time, and they had bought a few years before a company. They called it the company mill, which was a trashing mill operated with a 10 horsepower gas engine. And there were not very many mechanics around at that time, and they all often had trouble starting that thing. And when my father had 200 acres, possibly 60 acres in grain, he decided that year that he was going to hire somebody to do the trashing. And who did he hire? Well, it was an outfit that was operated by Treffly and Napoleon Faubert, who had a portable steam engine. But to trash with this steam engine, you need lots of wood to make the fuel. And my dad thought he was not short of that stuff, because they had demolished the old stable and there was a lot of scrap wood. This would be the ideal time for a cleanup in the yard. But the second day of the trashing, the scrap wood ran out. And they started to haul wood with a wheelbarrow from the stove wood that they had made in the winter for the kitchen stove. That made my dad pretty uneasy. Another thing that made him pretty uneasy was all the sparks that were flying out of the soft stove part, out of the smoke stack. Where's the barn now? This was a new barn, you know. Those sparks, you didn't know which way they were going to fly, and I tell you that made my dad pretty uneasy. When that contraption drove away from my farm, my dad made the promise that this thing would never come back to our place. In 1924, he bought an International McCormick Deering tractor. This is exactly a good picture of it. And he ordered a threshing mill. The threshing mill came the next year, in the next summer. It came on a flat car at Leonard Station, and there there's no ramp, no anything. And the people had to, my dad made a B, and they had to build a ramp, but ingenuity and imagination was not a lack of, not a commodity that lacked our ancestors. So they got this big 4-ton mill off the track anyway, with planks and timber and pipe poles and a whole bunch of work. I think this must have been a good investment, because this did the thrashing around the region for many years, 20 or 30 years. 1925 was a bad year for the Desai family. since the early 20s, shortly after my birth, my mother knew there was something not correct in her digestive system, and a growth or tumor was detected by Dr. Herwin, but there was not much that could be done about it. And in early 1925, they decided that she should go for surgery. She died on the 16th of February 1925. My oldest brother was 24. My second oldest brother was 14, and I had this invalid sister was 17. For the next couple of years, it was quite miserable for the little six-year-old that I was. I followed my father away from out of school. I followed my father on his heels, from especially from when darkness came. I followed him to the store. If he went to the drugstore, which was the community center, where as it was in all the villages, I guess at that time, the general store was where the place where people met, heard all the gossip. I heard all the gossip of the adults or the seniors. When my dad came home and went to the barn to visit his cattle before he went to bed, I followed him to the barn. When he went to bed, I went to bed with him. So I followed my father pretty closely for the next couple of years. At the end of 1927, I found that my dad was absent a little more often. And shortly before Christmas of 1927, my oldest brother, Victor, announced to me that I was going to have a stepmother. And on January the 5th, 1928, Camille Dessin, age 61, marries Agnes Paquette Morris, the widow of John Morris. Mrs. Morris had raised a family, her family in Rockland. They had a farm just south of Rockland, and all her children were adults or on their own at that time, and she lived in Rockland. And she bravely took the management of our new home, and she brought some kind of family life to our home. Now the milk production, vs. the cheese factory, did not suit my father too well, because he was a man that wanted income 12 months of the year instead of the cheese factories at that time operated from April to November. So he had bred his last group of heifers to produce winter milk. And when the cheese factories closed, he bought a new De Laval cream syrup, which was much larger than the old one that he had. And every other day or so, we shipped a 5 or an 8 gallon can of cream that we took to Leonard Station, and it went to Producers Dairy in Ottawa. My dad by that time had a pretty good herd of Holstein, because he always bought his sires from an Elite breeder in our district and a friend of his, which was George McCullough. And he had built up a pretty good herd. At the same time, the city of Montreal was growing like a mushroom, and the farmers around the city could not supply them with the amount of milk that was needed. This was very progressive times, very good times It was called, some of them called it the crazy 20s. But anyway, my dad, with a few improvements to the barn, like a ventilation system, the building of a milk room, a nice shed for 400 or 500 blocks of ice, we began shipping milk to the city of Montreal in early 1928. These were the good times in our... Where do I find the next page?
No, number 3.
Because if I don't keep to these pages, I'm going to run out of steam. Here. Yeah, in January early, we started shipping milk to the city of Montreal. These were the good years, but they didn't last too long. Maybe 2 years and a half. It's at Leonard Station, I guess, that I first met Francis Coburn and Peden and Moffat, what he called, John Moffat and all those. We accompanied our fathers and horsemen to take milk cans to the station at the 9 o'clock train. At the 9 o'clock train every morning. Then came the dirty 30s. After 2 years at the most, maybe 2.5 years, we were cut off from the Montreal milk market. There was the Ottawa milk market, but we were a little bit too far away, and you had to have connections some way, somehow, to get onto this Ottawa market. So, there was a Rockland businessman by the name of Jim Shane that had a bright idea. He owned a cinder block building on the Montreal Road at the corner of Montgomery Street. That's just a few hundred feet on this side of Cummings Bridge. I'm lost again in my notes. Anyway, he was wanting to organize a dairy, and he convinced quite a few farmers. I remember some of the names, I don't remember them all, but Adelaure Régimbal, Napoleon Proulx, the Rancourts, the Perrault brothers, the Henri farm, which is right where the subway is there to take the Montreal Road. There's a new barn there that's still there. That's where the Henri farm was. There's the Bazinets, which lived in that district too, and others, farmers from around here, which I didn't know the name. A farmer by the name of Thivierge at the Blackburn Corner. The Perrault brothers. Albert Lejeuc invested $1,000 in that too. He was the general merchant in Sarsfield, and he had a flatbed truck, so he was the ideal man to carry the milk. I'm going to read you here a little summary that Suzanne Fleming wrote, which is in much better English than I can give you. It says here, in the early 30s, John Wells' father, but about 25 other progressive farmers, invested $1,000 each in a dairy called the Rideau Dairy. Started by businessman Jim Shane from Rockford. He started with less money than he should have, and it operated for a few years and then went bankrupt. And before it did go bankrupt, my dad and all these other farmers had to reinvest money in this thing. And then they were at one time 4 months without getting one penny of income. And then another period, they were 2 months without getting this nearly cost our farm. No money for groceries, no money for taxes, no money to pay the mortgage, no money for interest. My dad was 65 years old. He depended on hired help to run his farm. My oldest brother was mechanically inclined. He was a very good man to run this tractor and run this thrashing mill, and he had even bought a silage machine, and he was more interested in servicing machine and selling machine. He became agent for Massey Harris at that time, and he always found a way not to be there when there was farm workers. And my second oldest brother, he left shortly after my dad married the second time for the booming city of the booming town of Sudbury. So my father, under those circumstances, were so humiliated, I thought he would go crazy. But I guess because of his faith in God, he pulled through. At 15 or 20 years old, you know, I was always thinking, how could my dad get into such a mess? At 15 or 20 years old, you think your dad is old-fashioned. At 30 years old, you begin to think that his theories and his way of thinking and his judgment, they're not bad. At 50 years old, when your dad is dead and gone, and you look at all he accomplished, you think he must have been one of the best. At 80 years old, you're writing your memoirs, you think he must have been a genius. Mm-hmm. Now about myself, in 1934 I was age 15. Had finished my 10th grade and passed my model entrance exams. In spite of my health condition, and late May, I had a bad fever. I missed only 2 days school because I couldn't afford to miss anymore if I wanted to pass those exams. And before the exams in late June at Rockland High School, I found out that my hands peeled. So my parents or the seniors told me that I had had scarlet fever. So shortly after the exams, I took sick again, and this time it was with pneumonia. Dr. Irwin was called to the rescue, and with 3 ounces of castor oil and a few mustard blisters, half of the summer in bed, a couple of days in the coma, I recovered, but not well enough for the shock of leaving my family on the 1st of September to attend the complicated curriculum of Rockland High School that September. because I had passed those model entrance examination, the personnel, teaching personnel expected I should have been one of the best scholars. Instead, I was one of the worst. I could not concentrate, I could not learn. My year at Rockland High School was just about a complete failure. In 1935, with the work on the farm during the summer and playing softball and good food, I guess, I recovered my health. My parents were in no financial situation to send me to a private school, so I was registered. They bought me a second-hand bicycle, and I checked in at the Navin Continuation School in the 11th grade. At Navin, the only language spoken was English, but the atmosphere was rural, and the teaching staff was good. I remember one that I particularly remember was Dick Powell, which was an excellent teacher. I had a booming year. I passed all the subjects that were assigned to me, and I even took grade in lower school that I had not had the chance to take in SARS. 1936, in the library, we had a book that was called Cry Havoc. We were recommended to read. This told us how Hitler was organizing his hardware and his soldiers to conquer the world. And the Western world wasn't doing a darn thing about it. There were other interesting things in 1936 that made lots of gossip. There was the abdication of Edward VIII, the crowning of George V. In September of 1937, I registered again at Navin Continuation School, but because of a change in personnel and a change in curriculum, you know the way it was in those continuation schools at that time, they taught history one year, the other history the other year, and they taught algebra one year, and they taught geometry the other year. So the subjects that I had passed, some of them were being taught, so I could only take three subjects. There was a change in teachers too. Oh boy, things weren't going good for me. I lost all hopes of further education. I was getting nowhere. And my older brother, Alphonse, who had left for Northern Ontario, had come back during the Depression, and he heard about salaries of $50 a month that were being paid in the shanties above Maniwaki. And he told me during the Christmas holidays, he says, if you want to help Dad with the chores, I'm going to try my luck in the shanties. He never worked a day on the farm after that. In the summer, he worked at the cheese factory at Homestead. He graduated from the Campbell Dairy School. He became a cheese maker, and later an ROP, an inspector. At age 18, I became my father's helper and support. All we heard about at that time was low salaries and unemployment. And on the farm, in spite of all the miseries and the low income, I was sure of my three meals a day. So I decided at that time that I was going to become my father's helper and support. And in my subconscious, I seen all the hard work that my father had done to clear that farm, to organize that homestead of his that he was so proud of. He was proud of the quality of his herd. He was proud of his farm. I could not let him down. I helped him the best I could, not having been prepared for these tasks. Electricity came to Sarsfield in 1934 or 35, but we were in no financial situation to get the farm wired. The house was wired in 1939. The same month the house was wired, Camille's second wife, my stepmother, Agnes, passed away after suffering a stroke. By then, I was sure the only member of the family that could continue the farming business was me. So I made up my mind that if I was going to be a farmer, I should be a good farmer. I had learned all I could from my father, but I knew he had a lot more experience than me, and he stayed with me for quite a few years after that. So I subscribed to every farm magazine I could hear of. La Terre de Chez Nous, The Farmer's Advocate, Le Bulletin des Agriculteurs, The Canadian Countryman. In 1942, my father was 76, and he was eager to pass on all his responsibilities. At age 23, 1942, I became the owner. But I knew then that I had met the lady of my dreams. On August the 4th, at 9:30 a.m., I was sitting nervously in front of the altar of St. Hugh's Church, patiently waiting for the bride. Around 1 a.m., at 10 a.m., the longest half hour of my life. She finally showed up. In the resume, 56 and a half years later, seven children, all age between 35 and 55, 17 grandchildren. These are pictures that were taken 6.5 years ago on the occasion of our 50th anniversary. I'll just go through a few of the highlights of my farming career. I started with 145 acres and 30 cattle, two teams of horses, an old tractor, rundown equipment. Because of my involvement in farm organization, in which I wanted more protection and a better future for my family and that of my fellow farmers, especially those of the counties of Prescott and Russell. After pressing the Ontario government for 25 years, we finally had an agricultural representative. And because of his advice, and again with the leadership of George McCullough, I joined the Olsteen Frasian Association. I started using artificial insemination. I became a member of Dairy Herd Improvement Association. A few years later, the farm was named Denrod after the first three letters of my two oldest sons, which was Denis and Rabai. So the farm was named Denrod. I kept improving the herd. The replacements After that, we're all purebreds. The improvement was slow but worthwhile. In the 1970s, we had a few cows that were graded very good, and one of them was sold to the showcase herd at the experimental farm, and she stayed around for quite a few years, and it was quite an honor for me when I visited the farm or went to the Central Ottawa exhibition. She was always there by the name of Denrob Minouche. In 1957, I made an addition to the stable, and later on, I thought I could afford some tile drainage. The tile drainage, because of my involvement in farm organizations and plowing matches, we had several demonstrations of tile drainage, which worked very well where we tried them. So if they work very well on parcels of land, why shouldn't they work on several acres? So this 1967, I tiled between 35 and 40 acres. For the first year or two, it wasn't too bad because the years were very regular rainfall, and a little later we tiled more, and 1972 we had a very wet year, and the water was lying all over our fields. In other farms where they were tile drained, the water had all disappeared. So we found out that our clay subsoil, which happens to be Bearbrook clay. The engineers in Kenville knew nothing about this kind of clay, and they had recommended that we put our tiles 60 feet apart. They should have been put about 35. So tile drainage was a good investment, but it took too long to work at our place on our farm. But since Bob took over, the farm is all tiled, but it's tiled closer, between 35 and 40 feet. And where we tiled 60 feet, he put another tile between those rocks. And now the place, the tiles work pretty good. In 1980, my son Robert was 30 years old. Married to Rita Smith, they had two children, Nicolas and Dominique. It was time for them to take over. Because of my involvement in farm organization, I had become familiar with CIAG, Cooperators Insurance Association of Guelph, which later became the Cooperators. I had started as a local agent for them, and after I sold the farm to Bob, I became full-time underwriter. I took my second retirement in 87. So in retrospective, when I look back at Denrob Farm, from 30 grade cattle to 100 purebred Holsteins, with only a very fair average, and from 80 acres to 315. In resume, today, under the management of Bob and when my grandfather Theophile, we're a young country. My grandfather Theophile was a settler. Camille loved farming, and he cleared all the land, and he loved every square foot of this tillable land. He loved this family, he loved this country. And it is that spirit and love and citizenship that his successors Tribal. Under the management of Bob and Rita and their son Nicholas, who married last fall, he built his home on the farm. It looks as if Demerob Farm was going to be around in operation for a few more years. I have no financial interest in the place, but I have great sentimental ones. The progress in agriculture has been tremendous. We do not have to go to other parts of the province today to see good crops, the very best cows, and very good farmers. Russell County Dairy Herd Improvement Association has been the number one with the highest highest production per cow per year since how many years?
Three or four years.
So, in crop production, we're in the top notch with any parts of the province. I had the privilege of being the hyphen, being the in-between, between two good farmers. I consider myself today not only the head of a large family, I consider myself the head of a clan. When we have our family reunions, whether it be at Christmas, Easter, or Thanksgiving, it gives great pleasure to Grandpa and Grandma to welcome the 45 members of that clan who chose to meet where our roots seem to attract us, and that is Cumberland Village, the old Maple Hall. Children, adults, have a whale of a time. I thank you so much for having listened to me for the last hour and a half.
Really appreciate you coming out.
If there's any questions, I'm still have enough of energy to answer.
You may have felt it difficult in your second language to give this presentation, but I'll tell you, you did a wonderful job.
Thank you very much. Do I have to open it?
Sure, you want to do what you wish.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Hey.
What does this thing mean?
The first issue. My roots are in Cumberland Township.
My roots are in Cumberland Township.
That's when you run out of trivia things to think of, you can read some up.
Is this an almanac or something?
It's just a calendar.
That's a calendar?
Yeah.
Okay. With all the things that have happened in the last millennium?
Could be anything in there, yes.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
It was a good talk.
Great. Absolutely wonderful.
How many of your
family? We do have questions. How many of your family are here?
How many of my family are here? Stand up.
Bravo. Jean Noël, you didn't say what part of France your ancestors came from.
Oh, Normandy.
Normandy.
Rouy. The town from the name of by the name of Rouy. Close to Rouen. Close to Rouen.
Yeah. Well, I know Rouen.
Yeah. And the reason, you see, I told you that, I don't remember if I told you this, the first time his name appears, it was at a court hearing, and and because he had been hired to work for a merchant in Quebec, in the town of Quebec at that time, and I guess he wasn't satisfied with the working conditions, and him and a friend of his by the name of Pierre Daudelet, they had to go to court and apply to the Conseil Souverain to breach the contract. And the same day, they were hired by a person by the name of Cloutier, which came from their town, and he owned land in the, where the Saint-Roch de Zonay now, and there were quite a few settlers that came from France that had settled there at that time. And yes, you're interested in that part of France because you were there.
Well, c'est vrai. Hey, you mentioned 1665 there, 1664. That was the time of Le Grand Intendant, Jean Talon.
Jean Talon
was bringing all these settlers, or bringing them.